Today is Thursday, October 7th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Junaid Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden plans summit with China's President Xi.
Chinese pressure on Taiwan has become another flashpoint amid ongoing Washington and Beijing tensions.
Plus, EU leaders divided over independent defense force.
The EU is divided over the bloc's reliance on the United States for its defense strategy.
Also, growing tensions in Somaliland over evictions. Our top story today is in the U.S. The White House said a virtual summit between President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping is being planned for later this year. The move comes as tensions between the countries increases over Biden administration's demands that Beijing cease military pressure against Taiwan and live up to its trade commitments. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara has the latest.
In the past several days, China has sent about 150 military jets into Taiwan's air defense zone, prompting warnings from the Biden administration. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The activity is destabilizing. It risks miscalculation, and it has the potential to undermine regional peace and stability.
Taipei considers itself independent, but Beijing sees it as a breakaway province. Chinese pressure on Taiwan has become another flashpoint amid ongoing Washington and Beijing tensions. Timothy Heath is a senior international defense researcher at the RAND Corporation.
Although concerning, I don't think that the risk of war is high. I don't think the Chinese are interested in provoking a war. Neither is the U.S.
The U.S. maintains unofficial relations and defense support for Taiwan, while upholding the One China policy, recognizing Beijing over Taipei, a position reaffirmed during a September phone call with Chinese President Xi Jinping, said President Joe Biden earlier this week.
We agree we'll abide by Taiwan agreement. That's where we are. And we made it clear that I don't think he should be doing anything other than abiding by the agreement.
But the U.S. has been ramping up pressure on China, saying it hasn't complied with a January 2020 deal in which Beijing agreed to buy $200 billion more in American goods and services by 2021. The administration is keeping tariffs on $350 billion worth of Chinese goods. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai.
We will use the full range of tools we have and develop new tools as needed to defend American economic interests from harmful policies and practices.
The U.S. also has been short alliances with Indo-Pacific powers, including Australia, which it helped equip with nuclear-powered submarines under the recent AUKUS deal. President Biden also hosted the leaders of Australia, India, and Japan, has been left out of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, a massive free trade deal among 10 Southeast Asian nations and 5 partners, including China. It has also been left out of the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, or CPTPP, an Obama administration-backed trade deal that former President Donald Trump withdrew from in 2017. Abraham Denmark is the Asia Program Director at the Wilson Center.
It will be increasingly difficult for the United States to pose to maintain our economic advantages in the Indo-Pacific, especially as China has recently applied to join the CPTPP.
A virtual Biden-Xi summit is planned later this year. The announcement followed a meeting in Zurich between National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and his Chinese counterpart Yang Jiechi. Patsy Widas-Kuwara, VOA News at the White House.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Wednesday said he had, quote, very positive, very productive, unquote, conversations with French leaders during his visit to help restore ties after a rift with Paris. The United States top diplomat is seeking to rebuild ties after a security pact between the United States, Australia, Britain resulted in Canberra scuttling a contract initially valued at $40 billion for French submarines. Speaking at a news conference along the chief of the Organization of Economics Cooperation and Development, Matthias Cormann, Blinken also said the United States is very concerned by China's provocative military activity near Taiwan. Blinken said at a news conference in Paris that Washington urged Beijing to cease all, quote, pressure and coercion directed at Taiwan, unquote, adding that the United States' commitment to Taiwan was, quote, rock solid, unquote.
Conversations we've had just in the last 24 hours were very positive, very productive, and reflect a lot of important work that's in progress. Work that was tasked by President Biden and President Macron to, as I say, deepen consultations, deepen cooperation, deepen coordination across a range of issues that make a real difference for citizens of France and citizens of the United States. I have to tell you and reiterate that we are very concerned by the PRC's provocative military activity near Taiwan. As we've said, the activity is destabilizing, it risks miscalculation, and it has the potential to undermine regional peace and stability. So we strongly urge Beijing to cease its military, diplomatic, and economic pressure and coercion directed at Taiwan. The United States has a commitment to Taiwan that is rock solid and over many years has contributed to the maintenance of peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and within the region. And we will continue to stand with friends, with allies, to advance shared prosperity, shared security, shared values, as well as continue to deepen our ties with the democratic Taiwan.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The dispute between Paris and Washington over Australia's decision to ditch a submarine procurement contract remains serious and unresolved, French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian said on Wednesday. He added France's differences with Britain are growing. The transatlantic dispute was triggered by the United States secret negotiations for a military pact known as AUKUS with Australia and Britain to counter China. Under the pact, Australia committed to buy U.S. nuclear submarines and pulled out of an existing supply deal with France. Paris said the deal had been done behind its back and in protest, briefly withdrew its ambassador from Washington. Speaking to French lawmakers, Le Drian said he had frank and substantive talks with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who is on a visit to Paris this week. Le Drian added that the two sides were working to get results by the end of October. European Union leaders failed to overcome divisions over whether to develop an independent defense force, despite anger at the chaotic withdrawal of Western forces from Afghanistan and new impetus from France after it was excluded from the U.S., Britain and Australia Security Pact. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
The chaotic withdrawal of Western forces from Afghanistan is still troubling for many U.S. allies. And at a summit of European Union leaders this week, the problem has been laid bare. The EU is divided over the bloc's reliance on the United States for its defense strategy. Reuters diplomatic sources say that the EU has failed to resolve their debate over whether to develop an independent defense force. Leaders meeting over dinner in Slovenia on Tuesday split rather predictably into eastern states fearful of Russia, who want to strengthen Europe within NATO, and those led by Germany, Italy, Spain and France, who want a more robust EU capability. Before the closed-door meetings in Bordeaux Castle, French President Emmanuel Macron told reporters that the 27 nations bloc must do more to manage crises on its borders and to be responsible for its own security. He had questioned the reliability of the US's protection of Europe prior to last month's dispute over an Indo-Pacific pact, which has added fuel to the fire. The diplomatic crisis was triggered after the United States negotiated a military accord in secret, known as AUKUS, tightening its military cooperation with Australia and Britain to counter China, but excluding France. The EU leaders are also being joined by six Balkan leaders, part of the bloc's decades-long strategy to create a ring of friends from southeastern Europe to North Africa. Proponents of a stronger EU defence say the warnings have been many, including Washington's so-called pivot to Asia during the Obama administration, Britain's departure from the bloc, and the Trump administration's America First policies. But despite progress on building a common defense fund to develop weapons together, the EU has yet to deploy its battalion-sized battle groups in a crisis.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. A September 29th meeting between the presidents of Russia and Turkey resulted in both sides committing to deepen relations. But as Dora Jones reports from Istanbul, that rapprochement could come at a high cost to Turkey's ties with the NATO ally, the United States.
The latest meeting between Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and Russian President Vladimir Putin saw Erdogan announce Turkey is ready to increase Russian military purchases and possibly cooperate in the production of submarines and missiles. The U.S. expelled Turkey from its F-35 fighter jet program after Ankara purchased Russia's S-400 anti-aircraft missile system and imposed military spare parts sales restrictions. Washington says the purchase undermines NATO defense systems, with Turkey's neighbor and rival Greece seeking to modernize its air force with the latest European and American fighter jets. Ankara says Washington's embargo is forcing it to turn to Russia. After meeting Putin, Erdogan appears ready to risk escalating tensions further with Washington, suggesting Turkey buy additional S-400 missiles from Russia, a move Washington has warned could trigger further sanctions. A Russian warship heads home via Istanbul from operations in support of the Syrian regime. With Turkey backing the Syrian rebels, it's a stark reminder that significant differences exist between Moscow and Ankara. Turkey and Russia, historical rivals, are also on opposing sides in conflicts from Ukraine to the Caucasus to Libya. But analysts suggest Erdogan's importance to Putin means for now that he's ready to accommodate Turkey. As Erdogan deepens his relationship with Putin, questions over Turkey's commitment to its traditional Western allies will likely continue to grow. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
The head of the World Food Program for Afghanistan, Mary Ellen McGrory, said the country's economy is on the brink of collapse and the humanitarian crisis has, quote, escalated and magnified at an incredible pace, unquote, over the past few weeks.
The events of 15th of August resulted in a freezing of the foreign reserves and the suspension of development and on-budget assistance, and the consequences have just been devastating. The economy is on the brink of collapse here in Afghanistan. The 38 million Afghans who still live in the country are adjusting to a new reality. It is incredibly sad. And over the weeks, a humanitarian crisis has just escalated and magnified at an incredible pace. It's a crisis that has its roots in decades of conflict and the increasing pressures of climate change.
That's Mary Ellen McGrory, World Food Programme Afghan Director, speaking on Wednesday. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appointed Italian-Swedish diplomat Staffan de Mistura as his new envoy to the disputed Western Sahara. Morocco's ambassador to the United Nations has said his country was consulted in the selection and approved of it. Western Sahara remains the subject of a decades-old dispute between Morocco and the Algerian-backed Polisario Front. Ahmed Fati, a global affairs analyst and a UN correspondent, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about what the appointment could mean for the conflict.
The position was vacant or inactive for over 2 years. The Polisario stopped engaging with the special representative of the Secretary General for the past 3 years, while Morocco stopped engagement over the past 2 years. I think for de Mistura, who is a seasoned UN diplomat, and the last position he held was the special envoy of the Secretary General to Syria, gives him a different weight in approaching the mediation and the tasks of his mission for the Secretary General. I think de Mistura will have to start from the point where Kohler, who was the previous special envoy and the former president of Germany, was the formula of the round table meetings that took place in Switzerland. This can be a good starting point for him. The incursion in the buffer zone known as Girgarat between Morocco and the Sahrawi territories still faces a disruption for the traffic of people and trade between Morocco and Mauritania. So it's getting very complicated. So I don't think that the Mistura is going to be ready to submit anything major. However, there is a chance to resume the political track, but there have to be more clear timeline, and that would be lacking.
In December 2020, then President Donald Trump broke with previous U.S. positions and recognized Morocco's sovereignty over the whole of Western Sahara. At the end of August, Algeria, a key backer of the Polisario Front, broke off diplomatic relations with Rabat, particularly over Western Sahara. How different would be the role of the UN envoy given the rising tensions between Morocco and Algeria and the U.S. recognition?
Algeria's decision to sever diplomatic ties with Morocco, this was motivated by their domestic agenda and calculations and not directly linked to the Polisahara issue. Nevertheless, at the same time, you see that Algeria was also part of the round table negotiation rounds in Geneva. So they are an invisible player. This gives them a little bit leverage with their allies, in this case, the Sahrawi, living in the eastern Burma, but does not really have any conclusive action to impact the situation on the ground. The U.S. decision to recognize the sovereignty of Morocco over the Sahara region, this is a binding decision for the U.S. Government, since it was also deposited at the U.N. So this took care of the international aspect. However, there are 15 members in the Security Council, including the U.S. You have to convince at least other 9 without any veto to recognize the sovereignty of Morocco. There are much more difficult geostrategic calculations involved in this regard, and it will be almost unrealistic to foresee that this is happening anytime soon. The talk which Algeria and the Polisario keep ignoring is about self-governing.
That's Ahmed Fati, a global affairs analyst and a UN correspondent, speaking with my colleague Mohamed El-Shenawi. This is the Voice of America. A powerful earthquake has collapsed at least one coal mine and as many as 100 mud houses in a remote mountainous part of southwest Pakistan. The quake early Thursday killed at least 23 people and the death toll is expected to rise. At least 200 people were injured. 4 of the dead were working on a coal mine when it collapsed. A 5.9 magnitude quake was in a remote part of Balochistan province where most residents live in sun-baked mud houses. The World Health Organization has started shipping COVID-19 medical supplies into North Korea, a possible sign that the North is easing one of the world's strictest pandemic border closures to receive outside help. WHO says it has started the shipment of essential COVID-19 medical supplies through the Chinese port of Dalian for stockpiling and dispatch to North Korea. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Somalia has accused Somaliland, a breakaway state not recognized by other nations, of forcibly evicting hundreds of people from a border town, as the UN's Emergency Response Agency warned of a brewing crisis. Fleeing families told AFP that armed police targeted southern Somali residents in the border town of Lasanod on Sunday, storming their homes, businesses, and schools before ordering them to leave all belongings and immediately bought trucks out of the city. Lasanod has traditionally hosted thousands of people who fled violence in southwestern Somalia years ago. Somalia's Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Rabo told a press conference that the operation was, quote, a misfortune, unquote. But Somaliland's foreign ministry defended the operation, saying the decision to deport a selected number of individuals was motivated by issues pertaining to security, including appeals from the local communities and authorities in Lasanod, unquote. For more, I spoke with Harun Maruf, senior editor of VOA Somali Service.
For the first time, Somaliland and Somalia are in collision course over the situation of Somalis in parts of Somalia, in which the two sides are interpreting in different legal terms. For Somaliland, which seceded from Somalia in 1991, it's an external issue. It sees people coming from Somalia as foreigners, like Ethiopians and other nationalities, and it's saying it has the legal authority to expel them, to evict them from their homes and return them to Somalia based on security concerns. There have been a number of people who were assassinated in the town Lasanod, and Somaliland says these individuals who were targeted with the eviction were a risk to security. So for Somalia, it's an internal issue. It sees Somaliland as part of Somalia, does not recognize Somaliland as an independent state.
The government is talking about security concerns. Are there any indications that there are either militants or other security issues that the government wants to tackle by evicting these people?
Yeah, the Somaliland government is taking this action based on security concerns. The background to this town is that there have been a number of incidents where police officers, city council officials were assassinated in recent months and years. It's not something that started in the last 2 months or 5 months. It has been going on for some time. These incidents were isolated and they were far apart. But nonetheless, a number of people have been targeted and assassinated. So far, the government has not published any evidence of who was behind it. But when you talk to the officials off the record, they say it's the responsibility of militants. But so far, no evidence has been shown.
How true are fears by some that the government might just be creating another refugee problem by taking this action
Well, this is the argument by refugee advocates, IDP advocates. It's not being considered as a refugee because they are still Somalis. Somali government is considering them as people who were displaced forcefully by Somaliland authorities. Obviously, it has so far created crisis. Thousands of people, women, children, some women reportedly gave birth along the way on tracks while they were moving from Lasano to another town in Galkayo. Somaliland, Puntland, let me say, Puntland, which neighbor is Somaliland, is now appealing for assistance because of the huge influx of people coming from Somaliland. So it's already created a humanitarian crisis. And there are urgent efforts by Puntland and others to help and support these people. They were accommodated in the central town of Galkayo, and now that's where they are. We don't know whether they will go back to Las Anod or move further down to southern Somalia.
That's Harun Maruf, senior editor of VOA Somali Service, speaking with me from Washington. Down a dusty farm track in Chilean wine country, forestry experts are nursing a plantation of saplings whose bark holds the promise of potent vaccines. Gavino Garay of Reuters reports.
The bark of the quiche trees. Long used by the indigenous Mapuche people to make soap and medicine, the trees have been used to make a highly successful vaccine against shingles and the world's first malaria vaccine. Now, two molecules made from the bark of branches pruned from older trees in Chile's forests are being used for a COVID-19 vaccine developed by Maryland-based Novavax. The chemicals are used to make a substance that boosts the immune system. Over the next 2 years, Novavax plans to produce billions of doses of the vaccine, mostly for low- and middle-income countries, which would make it one of the largest COVID-19 vaccine suppliers in the world. With no reliable data on how many healthy quiche trees are left in Chile, experts and industry officials are divided on how quickly the supply of older trees will be depleted by rising demand. But nearly everyone agrees that industries relying on quiche extracts will at some point need to switch to plantation-grown trees or a lab-grown alternative.
My estimates maybe 4 years ago was that we were heading towards the sustainability limit of cutting limbs.
Ricardo San Martin, who developed the pruning and extraction process that created the modern quiche industry, said producers must immediately work toward making quiche products from younger plantation-grown trees. Quiche producers and their customers say the harvest can continue for now without decimating the supply of older trees. Andres Gonzalez, the manager of Desert King International, Novavax's sole supplier of quiche extracts, told Reuters it is set to produce enough quiche extract from older trees to make up to 4.4 billion vaccine doses in 2022.
We feel the responsibility, and we believe that we are up to it. But today, we are quite confident that we are capable of producing it.
A relatively small volume of quiche extract is required to make vaccines, just under 1 milligram per dose. But the supply is stretched by the demand from other industries. While some have expressed confidence in the producer's ability to manage supply and demand, there are concerns about other threats, like drought and fire.
That's Gavino Garay of Reuters. Tanzanian writer Abdulrazak Gonay has been awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. The Swedish Academy said Thursday the award was in recognition of his, quote, uncompromising and compassionate penetration of the effects of colonialism, unquote. Born in Zanzibar in 1948 and based in England, Gonay is a professor at the University of Kent. He is the author of 10 novels, including, quote, Paradise, unquote, which was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 1994. The prestigious award comes with a gold medal and a 10 million Swedish kronor, which is over $1.14 million. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.
The James Webb Space Telescope, scheduled for launch this December, is equipped with a much larger mirror than the Hubble and is said to be 100 times more powerful. This is Rick Pantaleo. Please join me for a preview of this new space observatory on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. My guest will be Eric Smith, program scientist for the James Webb Space Telescope program at NASA. Be sure to listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.